Hello, everyone. This is Jenna Griffiths from Earth School. I have with me again on the line Iztach Berry. Iztach is a native Israeli and based in New York. He's a shamanic practitioner who conducts shamanic healing ceremonies, teaches workshops for adults, seniors, teens, and children in the USA, Europe, Israel, Hawaii, all over the show, and he also leads trips to Brazil's Amazon. Iztach has developed quite a very interesting program geared to high school children, and we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the bridge. I'd just like to introduce him, to say hello to him. Hello, Iztach.
Hello, I'm here. I'm happy to be here again.
Oh, wonderful to have you with us again. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your work with and your apprenticeship? Because you've worked with both the Ecuadorian and the Peruvian Indians.
I actually never been to Peru. The tradition that I study is from Ecuador and Brazil, the Amazonian Brazil. I happen to, you know, like anything else in life, everything comes as a coincidence. But I happened to take a trip with John Perkins to Ecuador, and I met a shaman there, or a yachak named Jose Joaquin Pineda, and I had incredible visions with him. And a year later, I came to visit him again, and in the vision that I had with him, I had an initiation ceremony in my visions, and then he asked me to become his apprentice and to work with him. And we worked for quite a while, for 3 years, for 6 months, most of the time here in New York, actually, where he came to visit his daughter. And so we worked 3 months in the spring and 3 months in the winter, and we worked through many, many hundreds of healings. And that's how I study. And I also study with Ipupiara, a shaman from the Amazon, a Brazilian Amazon, and with his wife, Klesha, and assisted them in many healings too, and went on many trips with them and assisted them there.
So okay, sorry, I had that mixed up then.
yes, that's okay.
Okay, great. And so you're also the founder of the New York Shamanic Circle.
I'm a co-founder. We founded after my first trip to Ecuador and the Amazon. I came back and my world were upside down, like many people who take this road, and I wanted to bring these things back into practice, and I took a workshop with some more people, and then we decided to make it a weekly meeting, and that's how we end up creating the New York Shamanic Circle.
Okay, good. And would you like to just tell us a bit about your shamanic portal?
You know, after a while, I felt that my mission is to bring shamans from South America to, and my teacher to teach in New York City, to have people who don't have the chance of traveling, to bring them, the shamans, here. And there was really no way to advertise or let people know about these. And for a while, I was a little frustrated until I decided that what we need is to create one website that all the shamanic community can gather around. It's like a hub, and people from all over the globe now are coming there, and we have a listing of workshops and trips and apprenticeship programs and healers and elders and all kind of everything that is related to shamanism is in there. We have incredible trove of articles and blogs and links to all shamanic practitioners and offerings around the world. It really is a very beautiful, growing entity. And we have a lot of people who are coming every month, almost 45,000 people coming every month from all over the world, from 168 countries.
Wow.
We have people come from India, from China, from Iraq, from Tema, from Yemen, from all kind of places that you would not even think that people are interested in shamanism, but they all come, and it's a great place for us all to meet. It's called shamanportal.org.
Okay, yeah, great. So that's good. Shamanportal.org.
Yes.
Great. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your work with high school children? Because you've done quite a lot on that, in that area.
Yeah. I truly believe that shamanism is not exclusive to to adults. It's actually better to start when people are still young and open, and that it's actually part of their education and their life. And I took that to schools and to elementary schools and to high schools and to colleges. And the responses are just incredible, and it's just wonderful to see children opening up finding their roots.
When you work with children, do you work exclusively with power animals? I mean, our talk today is going to be on power animals, but do you work more generally with them?
Power animal is a very good way to start, because power animals.
What? Sorry? What is a power animal?
What is a power? That's exactly, we call it power animals, and they could be also medicine animal, and they could be also totem animals or spirit guides in the shapes of animals. And I think that for many thousands of years, as men was still very connected to nature, one way to learn about the world, it was to observe the environment, and the environment included animals. And in many cases, it's also in our life, but we have pets, you know, the cats and the dogs and fish and all the animals that we are raising in our houses today. And each of these animals have different qualities and different behavior, different ways of doing things, and by observing them, we can learn about the world and about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so in these teachings, we teach young children or adults to find or to retrieve an animal that is most likely their guide, their teacher.
But how are these animals different to other spirits? Are they like saints and angels, or are they just made up by the children, or is it fantasy?
Well, it's hard to tell because when we are talking about the work in shamanism, we have to always maintain. Sorry, the part of the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
In the shamanic view, everything in this universe is made up, is all illusion. There is nothing that is real in the sense that we think that this is it, because even if you are looking at a human being is only 80% water or what percentage it is, and then the rest is chemicals. But what is made it? It's all energy particles that are moving in different directions and in different speeds, and they create a form, and that form we call human.
On another level, we're more empty space than anything else. on an atomic level,
That's quite true.
Yeah.
So I think that what happened with children, they don't have the separation that we have between what's real and what is fantasy. They're still very open, and many children have imaginary friends in the forms of animals to begin with. And I'm sure that you and I and many people have that in our imagination. So the separation between, it's easier for children to walk into this undefined world much easier than adults. And in the shamanic tradition, we divided the world into three different universes in a way. The world of that we are living in is the world what we call the middle world, and then there is the upper world, which is the world of spirit and angels and teachers, and the world of the underworld or the lower world, which is the world of the anima, the animals, the spirit of the earth, the spirit of the mother earth. The spirit of the upper world is the spirit of the father, the spirit of thoughts and inspiration and other things like that. So, so the spirit of the animals is the spirit of the anima, which is the power, the passion, creativity, the creating life, and those are the animal spirit, and that's what they difference between them and the spirit of the upper world, the teacher world.
Oh, okay, that's quite a huge distinction. Are your power animal work, does it come from South America? Because there's also quite a strong American, traditional American, Native American, North American work with power animals.
Well, you know that each culture has its own symbols that relate to their life, to their teachings, and it's usually their surrounding. So in South America, they use two of the most powerful symbols are the anaconda, that's from the Amazon, and the jaguar. But if you go into the mountains of the Andes, that might be the mountain lions, and maybe the bird, the white dove. In the Native American, a lot of them use the white buffalo or the buffalo. And in many, many cultures, the eagles or the condor or the big birds of the sky.
Or the bear, perhaps.
And then other places, it's the bear. But I would not imagine people in the Amazon looking at a bear as their power animal because it's not there.
Polar bear. Yes. So people choose animals that are around them or within their mental kind of framework.
Because those are animals that they can observe, they can learn from them. Each animal has its own qualities. And that's what we actually, when I work with children and adults, is to teach them to see the symbolism of each of these animals and how it relates to their life. What are they like, this animal or another animal? Or what is it that they need to learn from the animal? And that sometimes it's a great revelation for children and adults.
So do they kind of see them as sub-personalities of themselves? You know, parts of themselves they need to call
on. Can say that, or you can say that they also need to learn to become that part. So in other words, you might be a lion, but there is also a teaching that the lion would have that you need to learn from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So besides just all the theory, how do you go about this?
Teaching the children?
Yeah, I know you use drums, but...
Traditionally, in shamanic journeys, shamans use drums or rattles or other instruments to create sound, and that sound is lowering the brainwave to help the brain come down and be more receptive. So the drumming, when you drum it between 180 to 160 drum beats per minute, lower the wavelength to an opposite where you can, when you reach, when you're meditating for 20 minutes or half an hour, but that happens in very quickly with a drum, and then you enter into a state of in between, which is what all shamanic work happens. It's the world of in between being awake or between being asleep. It happens in the work in the time of the midday or midnight or sunrise or sunset. That's the best time for shamanic work. So when a person is journeying with a drum, it brings him to this portal, into this opening, into this other world. And when they travel down into the earth and they emerge to the other world, to the lower world, they may see animals, and they need to ask them if they want to be their friends or if they want to be their teachers. And many animals refuse to. Many animals say, no, it's not your teaching. You're going to be your teacher. So you have to be persistent and ask for more. And eventually you do get an animal that teaches you what is it that you need to be doing this life, and then you can ask questions and you develop a relationship with it.
And is this safe for children? I mean, isn't it quite dangerous for them?
In what way dangerous?
You know, perhaps they could get lost in the spirit world.
Well, the technique that we're using, there is a callback at the end of the journey that require the child or any person to come back into this world, and nobody is in any danger of not coming back, and if there is a place where you are entering a world and there is a technique to bring you back and make you feel safe. I was teaching hundreds of kids, and none of them felt any threats or any dangerous in that way. On the contrary.
I've read some of your feedback from children. It's just phenomenal.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what sort of things excite them mainly?
Well, you know, my main goal in teaching the kids these techniques is to become independent. You know, the work with shamanism teaches you to rely on your spirit. You don't have to rely much on other people's opinion. It makes you independent. It makes you a more responsible human being.
How does it do that? That sounds fantastic.
Well, when you journey and you work with spirit guides you and give you answers to questions that otherwise you might need to ask other people, like your parents, your supervisor, your boss, or any other authority, and that give you another outlet, which is come from within you to find an inner answers to questions that bother you, or sometimes situation that you don't really know what else to do. So it's
so the control is within and not outside of you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, and you feel more in control. And sometimes you get answers that are very surprisingly creative to deal with issues in your life.
So when you've taught someone to access their power animal, mm-hmm. can they then re-access that on their own, or do they have to go to another?
Well, there are a few. Yes, of course, they hopefully they will do it in a daily practice to go into their power animals and then work with them on issues that need to be resolved. You know, these issues could be anything. It could be family issues, school issues, parents' issues, love issues, money issues. And the answers that spirit usually give are answers that are not specific to particular incident, but it's general. It's opening. It's giving room for persons to grow and to understand the situation that he's in, with a lot of responsibility. And I think that that's what we want to teach kids and adults. And one way to do that, to continue to journey, is to either to buy yourself a drum or rattle and close your eyes and rattle yourself, or to buy a CD with already recorded drumming, or you can put your hands on your heart and listen to your heartbeats. Or just close your eyes and imagine you're connecting with that spirit and bring it in and ask that question.
Do you have any drubbing like that for sale on your website?
Yeah, yes, I do.
Do you? Oh, good. Okay, yeah. So we'll put the links on. That's great. So can every person or every child find a power animal?
From my experience, yes. There are some people who are children who may have a little bit more difficulties, and it usually relates to fear. And with some more training and more conversations and more permission, people do get to, every person gets to see it and work with it. Yeah.
Okay. And from what age is it good to teach children? What ages have you worked with? What's the youngest?
Well, I worked from people from the age of 8 to 80. So
wow.
I think that 8 is definitely 8, 9, 10.
Okay.
You work it in a different way. You work with children a little different than you work with adults, but they all get it. And working with power animals, the children can definitely become the power animal, and they can play with that idea, and they play with their qualities, and they can dance it, and they can sing it, they can move it in a way that their power animals behave, and they can learn on themselves many very important issues.
So, for example, what? Give me an example.
Well, if a person who has a snake as a power animal, he can move on the floor, on the earth, in the way that only the snake can move, and he can see how he needs to be connected to the earth, the relationship between him and the earth, and what is it to be so close to the earth and look up, to be so small and so vulnerable in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when children are going, you know, children go through transition. I mean, we all do, but you know, that's that whole period of going from being a child to being an adult,
mm-hmm.
which is that whole teenage period, which is quite traumatic. How
yeah.
can power animals help with that?
These teenage years are very confusing years for teenagers, and many of us as adults are trying to help them out, probably would feel resistance because teenagers don't trust adults, but they do trust their inner voice. And working with power animals or spirit guides or other spiritual entities helps them to find their own answers. And I've seen it many, many times in classes where if you try to tell that person that he needs to be more responsible, or he needs to finish his homework, or this person that he or she dates is not the right person for them, they would not accept that.
They would do the opposite.
Exactly. That's why they're a teenager. Because the rest of the world is stupid. But if it comes from their spirit guides, from the inner voice, from their whatever you call it, then it's something that enriches them. It's something that gives them confidence. It's something that they can trust. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds amazing. When you work with a group, how many people, what's the maximum number that you work with at any one time?
Well, it depends. You know, I worked with in high schools where we have 40, 50 kids.
Wow.
And I work with classes that are 20 or 25. It depends on the class. But, you know, we sit in circle. And so each of us sees the other's eyes. And there is a kind of like a community form. I can tell you a story about a high school in Long Island where they invited me to do an after-school program. And it's mostly African-American and Hispanic neighborhood or high school.
Mm-hmm.
And they were divided into two groups and two clans. And in school, they were very hostile to each other. They didn't cooperate at all. And we came there. Me and my friend came there to do this the classes. And through working with these power animals and shape-shifting into them and dancing them and moving them and dancing them, and the joy that started to come out of these bodies, these two clans started to mingle and for them to hold hands with each other was amazing accomplishment. But here they were in a circle holding hands and singing the song and moving. And maybe it was just for this particular time, but for them to experience that the unity of all of them, that they are all the same, they're all dancing and singing and breathing in the same room and it's safe, it was quite
wow.
An achievement.
That sounds like quite a healing process. You know, even if they do, they can never go back completely to the original.
Exactly, and I think that you know what was amazing in that the leader of the gang, the black gang, he was very kind of like angry when sitting on the side. And when he realized that everybody's joining, he's joined in, and he started to move and dance and sing the song. And all of a sudden, he was starting to sing how he feels that his ancestor coming through his body, that he's feeling the mother of Africa in him. And he became so open. And he totally transformed from this fearsome gang leader, and he became such a leader for them to see. So you can transform this anger and violence into something that is positive through this work.
That sounds fantastic. How many years have you been working with children?
I think it's already 12 years.
12 years.
Well,
and you love it.
Yeah.
12 years. That's fantastic. So do you also work with the teachers?
Well, in all these classes, teachers are present. So they I actually can I work in on the Upper West Side here. We have a health fair every year, and I work with teenagers who have difficulties in studies. So they're quite grown up now, but they have to continue to take this until they graduate. And their teachers are coming there with them, and I can see that sometimes the teachers have more of an emotional impact than the kids themselves. But, you know, what we can offer is a glimpse, an opening, a possibility that their life doesn't have to be the way it is, that there is room for change and changing direction. So although I see them once a year, but those kids are waiting for that next class, the next year to come to continue to work on their work. I mean, for some of these kids, it's very difficult to close their eyes and imagine.
Does it just feel too unsafe to close their eyes? Or
exactly.
What?
And they try to close their eyes. They open up to see what other kids are doing and if they are looking at them. And they even for them to share that they've been a gorilla for a minute, it's incredibly exposing.
Mm-hmm.
So it teaches them to trust. It teaches them to open up that there is another dimension to them.
Mm-hmm. So how long does it take for you to get that trust?
With the classes?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. I don't think that we should. I'd never worked less than an hour, but from anywhere from 1 hour to 3 to 4 hours, that's great.
Okay. Would you prefer to go back more frequently to those different groups?
I prefer, because then you can really start working deeper and develop the connection between the child or the person to his spirit guides and work with them. And develop different relationship to other spirit guides. And sometimes children or other adults have different, not just one power animal. They have different ones for different reasons. And you can work with them on different issues of their life. And that's beautiful to see.
Yeah. So you use the drumming process and then take the person down to that altar state, and then they meet these animals and then ask them to until they find one that says yes.
Yeah.
That's right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, can you give us some examples of experiences that sort of things that children have told you?
Well, I can tell you that in New York there is a high school. It's called Stuyvesant High School, and which is the top mathematical academic school
mm-hmm.
here. And I was teaching there a few years, and on graduation day, one day, one kid came over to me and he said, "Mr. Beery, I have to tell you that in all the years that I studied at Stuyvesant High School, the only class that was practical, it was your class." Now, here we are. We are working on something spiritual or shamanism, working with spirit. And that kid really, he got it. Because the work with spirit is not only to develop your spiritual work, but it's very practical. Because when you ask questions, you want to get practical answers, answers that can actually change your life, that you can actually do something to improve your life. That's really what it's about. It's about improving somebody's life and healing, and healing wounds, and finding answers to questions that are bothering you. So you could be more calm, you can be more collected, you can do your homework. You don't have to be so upset if your girlfriend left you or boyfriend left you.
That's what kids need. You know, they need these just very, very, on a very practical level, guidance that's not coming from their parents.
Exactly, because parents and teachers, with all due respect, of course, they do a great job, but they come from their own perspective of life.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come from the perspective of the child. And the child needs to understand or to feel that they are actually understanding him, that and spirit do.
Sounds like a very powerful tool. I like that. I read one thing about a child who his power animal, I think it was a panther, scratched him. Do you remember that story?
Not at this moment.
Okay, yes. So it scratched him, and he said, "How can you harm me when you're my power animal?"
Mm-hmm.
And then the animal said, "Do you not value your body?"
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah. And so it was basically a lesson in taking care of
the body.
Because I think he had asked him, how could he have a beautiful body? And the lesson was, take care of it.
Uh-huh. I think that it's so much more powerful than your mother telling you to do that, right?
Yeah, when a huge panther
sticks
its claws in you.
Yeah. And, I mean, I remember one day it was, I don't know if it's in these quotes from children, but there was a girl in school, and she said, "Oh, you know, Mr. Beery, I didn't get anything." And I said, "Well, what did you get?" And she says, "Oh, you know, I saw this horse, and the horse wanted to run, but he was stuck in the mud, and he couldn't run." And I said, "Really? And what do you think it is?" And she says, "I don't know. I mean, I didn't see anything." And she said, "Okay, think about that. What is the, what the horse wants to do?" And she said, "He wanted to run. He wanted to get out of this mud. It got, you know, he was sinking." And I said, "Well, does it remind you anything about you?" And she said, yes. "I feel like I really don't like to be here. I want to run away. I want to be in other places." You know, so she started to tell the story through the horse. And she finally realized that is her teaching, that she needs to be more independent. She needs to find her own power, because the horse does represent leadership. It represents the need for freedom to roam around. And although you can tame a horse, but you can never take the wild part out of him.
Mm-hmm.
So it was such a beautiful metaphor for her life, and the beauty of it is that she got it without anybody telling her.
That's fantastic. So do you work with adults as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I work with a lot with adults, and in many different ways. I work with senior citizens, with people that are, you know, closing their life cycle or this life cycle. I work with business people, and that is an incredible tool for business people to understand their qualities and what makes them a good business people or leaders, and what they need in that leadership place. I work with people who are interested in improving their life, or with my private clients.
Okay, so you come into Zurich in June. That's the 17th of June, thereafter, and you're going to give some courses.
Uh-huh.
Will you be doing adult courses and children's courses?
Well, I hope children and adults can come. Yeah. It's valuable for both. You know, we are all one, and we are all the same, children and adults.
Okay, so you don't mind mixing if the group is mixed?
As long as the adults can be open to the children.
They can be childlike.
Exactly. As long as they would not be afraid to being vulnerable and share from their heart and open their heart, then there is no difference. Because our soul have no age, really.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. So when you're working with kids, would you have teenagers separate to younger kids of 8 or 9? Or would you put them together?
I think that it's helped to more or less put them in different in group ages just for their comfort. It's not necessary,
okay.
But it just helps them to be in that way.
More comfortable with each other.
Yeah, I mean, children have, something about, in 1 year apart, it makes a big difference, not so much adults, but, if you can, yes. Yeah.
Okay. I have some questions that I'd like to ask you in the meantime.
Sure.
From Kurt, Jacamal, who's in Haiti at the moment.
Uh-huh.
He says, how permanent are these power animals? How can I be sure I got the right vision at the start?
Mm-hmm.
And can I change to a new power animal if I want? So that's three questions, actually. So how permanent are they?
Well, it reminds me of a story about a friend of mine who used to be in the New York Shamanic Circle who came to our meetings, and he was really trying to get a power animal. And for 6 months he came and he couldn't find it. There was just, every time he went into journey, he could not find a power animal. And he kept on doing it, and he kept on coming, and kept on trying, and kept on trying. I mean, other person probably would just say goodbye, but he continued to do it until one day he got a wolf. And that wolf was with him for, I don't know, maybe 6 years or so. One day that wolf announced that she's leaving. She's no longer going to be there. And he was devastated. What do you mean? So the next time he journeyed, and there was a new power animal showed up. It is in many times it's not really in our power to change that. They come, they do, they talk, they leave. They have a totally different agenda than ours. They are here to help us, but you can have more than one. You can have many of them or a few of them, that each of them represent different knowledge that you need to know at that time. And when you go down into this lower world or into this consciousness, you can open yourself and ask whoever is here to help me, and one of them will come.
Is there a chance of you ever getting a bad animal, somebody who's actually...
Never heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of that. There's really no bad animals.
Okay, so you don't have it like, sometimes you have bad spirits or whatever.
Well, that's a different story. That's a different mm-hmm. story. But it's not a bad animal. There's really no bad animal. And I never, in all my years that I worked on these, never heard of anybody who was hurt by or... was afraid of or something that, did somebody harm anybody in the spirit world? No.
Okay. And how many animals have you got of your own?
Well, that's really my secret.
Ah. And when you're working with people, do you suggest various animals up front and talk about their strengths, or do you just
to show you that, you know, some people say that power animals is something that one person makes up, and I want to tell you a little story that I had a 12-year-old boy came with his parents for a healing session. And I was standing in front of him, starting to do the ceremony, and all of a sudden, from the sky, up above my head, a shark fell and went into...
A shark fell
mm-hmm. from the sky and went whoosh into this kid's body.
Wow.
What a shock, isn't it? So I opened my eyes, and I was a little shuddered. And I asked the kid, tell me, if you had a choice to choose one animal that you want to be, what it would be? And he said, a shark. He didn't say a lion. He didn't say a dog or a cat. He said a shark. And my body was shaking. And I said to him, why? He said, because I want to be strong and powerful like the shark, because the kids in school bother me all the time. So you can say that I made it up. You can say that he made it up. You can say that the shark was real. You can say that, but the shark was there.
And so did that shark protect him? Or?
I believe so. It gave him the power of the shark. Yeah.
He didn't get messed up in the locker room anymore.
I hope so.
People came out tattered. All the other people came out rather tattered.
Yeah. But even just for him to express that fear or that feeling that he had, that the kids are there bothering him and mm-hmm. they're teasing him and they make fun of him, and now he has something that he can feel the power to protect himself with.
And was he aware that he felt that power? Did he?
Yes, of course. I mean, I can tell you stories like that. Power animals, sometimes I can actually see them hovering around about people when they journey. And they choose the person to walk into.
What do you mean to walk into?
To become part of.
Do you actually see the animal walking
yes.
into them?
Yeah. So there was a woman once in a group, a mother and a daughter, and there was a peacock going in between them.
A peacock. Yeah.
So I asked the daughter was sharing, and she was saying, oh, I saw this and that and this and that. And I said to her, but you didn't see the peacock? And she said, yes, I saw the peacock, but I sent it to my mother. Yeah.
Why?
So
why did she do that?
Because it wasn't belong to her. The teaching was not hers. Maybe the teaching was for her mother, so her mother could be more proud of herself. Maybe she could need the qualities of the peacock.
But that was interesting that the peacock actually was willing to go to her, but she turned it down.
Yes, power animals sometimes are very tricky. You know, they can be. I have one power animal that she always shapeshifts. And it's very confusing for me, and it sometimes makes me mad, because I wanted to stand there and speak to me, but she always changes shapes.
Into another animal?
Yes.
Oh.
And one time I got so mad, I told her that it's enough, you know, you have to stand still and tell me what it is, why she's doing it. And she says, well, this is teaching for you not to take things for what they look like. It's one of them. And then the other power animals that I have are very steady. So they have life of their own, or teaching of their own.
And they stay as long as they need to stay, and then they move on. So that answers that first question from Kurt about how permanent they are.
Yeah.
They could be just a day, and they could be for years.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And so Kurt's other question, how can I be sure I got the right vision at the start?
Well, there is no wrong vision. I mean, the vision that you need is the vision that you get. You always get what you need, not what you want. And that's part of the issue of trust in spirit. And you have to learn how to accept what your vision to be true for you at this particular time of your life.
But you kind of maybe feel that you're making it up.
Well, we all making everything up. But then again, think about the shock. You know, did I make it up?
That's very powerful. I can actually see that.
Yeah.
Amazing. We make a good film.
Well, imagine experiencing it, going from the sky and swooping down and entering this poor child body. You know, it was quite a surprise.
Wow. That's quite scary.
So but also powerful.
Yeah, powerful too. So I'm sure it really helped that child.
Mm-hmm.
To want to be like a shark, he must have been having a terrible time.
Imagine, but, yeah.
So Kurt says, can I change to a new power animal if I want to?
Well, good luck.
Sounds like a man. Can I have a new wife?
Well, you need to get an agreement with that power animal that you no longer need that services, but you need to have a conversation with that. It's exactly like you have a conversation with a person that you work with or the person you live with.
Okay, so it's a contract.
It's an agreement, yes, that you, I mean, they are here to help us, you know.
Yeah. And so even though you're working for them with these people on for one day, you teach them how they can work on a daily basis with animals they access?
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's really the whole purpose of it, is to create independent people, people who are not dependent on me or any other shaman or other teacher, to live a balanced and full life. And that this is a tool. The power animal and the spirit work is a tool to use to create balance in your life, to make more happier life and stronger life.
Yeah, and to empower the child, or to empower the person, really.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a very powerful tool you have, Isbeck. I'm sure Art has been waiting a long time for us to ask his question. Okay. So Art Davis says, how do you know, or what makes you think that our life continues after the death of the body?
So I think I shared it one time before that I had an experience of previous life. And it wasn't something that I asked for. It's just something that came to me while I was standing naked in this small little house up in the high Andes of Ecuador.
You had a memory.
Yeah, I was in the middle of a shamanic cleansing ceremony, and all of a sudden there was like incredible memory of my previous life, and I realized that it was so detailed to the last detail. Of a previous life that I lived in Vienna, that I was born in 1890, and I would not tell the whole story now, you'll have to read it in my book. And it's not for radio, maybe, too. But it turned out...
Do you have a book out, or is it still busy being written?
Busy being written for 10 years now.
Okay.
But I'm going to get it done. I was very, very disturbed by that vision, and that vision gave me an indication of something that I was dealing with for a very long time, of fear of heights, a few years later, I was at Omega in a shamanic gathering, and I was telling that story over there to a few people that were sitting after the event. And this woman was saying, "I know that place in Vienna." And I was,
wow.
My body was shaking. And a few years later, I went to Italy. I was teaching there in Firenze. And a woman from Vienna was there in this workshop, and I was telling her the story. And she says, "You know what? I work in the Museum of Vienna. Why don't you come?" And I went to Vienna, and I discovered I got the pictures of the house and the place and all the details that I saw in my vision. And I printed them all out, and I have copies of them. And so I don't know for other people, but I happen to verify the that vision that came to me in the Andes, almost to the last details. So, Art, this is a very short time that we are here on this earth. Make the best of it. And we would definitely come back again in a different way, in a different form, and maybe of a different gender, and we continue to the journey for us, for ourselves, until we fulfill our life purpose here.
Yeah, you know, so much has been written about this. When you think about it, that you could fill libraries and libraries and libraries of our thoughts, but actually we never really know about the mystery, and we should more enjoy the mystery. There was a wonderful film, I don't know if you saw that film, called The Serious Man by the Coen brothers.
No, I didn't see that yet.
It's a Jewish man, I think it's in the 50s. He's a
mm-hmm.
professor of mathematics.
Uh-huh.
And he's been bribed by a student who doesn't want to lose face, you know, because of the Asian...
Uh-huh.
not losing face, and so his father, I think, puts money on the table, and he says, "Where did that money come from?" And he says, "Accept the mystery." And I think that is just such a beautiful...
Well, this is the hardest thing for us to do, is to live in a world that is not concrete. We, in all past, the whole world was a mystery, and people accepted it as part of their life. But we now want to know the details. We want to know the facts. Otherwise, we can't believe. But that's all come down to faith: the faith in the universe, the faith in Mother Earth, Pachamama, the stars, the moon.
Yeah, we'll miss a lot of the magic when we try and reduce it. You know, I remember once when years ago at university I studied meteorology,
mm-hmm.
and I never really looked at the cloud the same way for quite a while, and they were my most favorite things, and I just really felt that something had been stolen in a way.
No, that's true. It's true. I mean, the mystery is so beautiful, the magic, you know. I remember for myself, and I'm sure it's for other people too, that when we were young and we spoke about all of those things, we were reprimanded as a dreamers, as a daydreamers, as people who are astronauts, people who can't be on the Earth. I mean, how many names people called us, you know.
There would be no progress without dreamers.
Yes, that's what I think. If you look at the most pragmatic people, like, you know, our friends Albert Einstein, he most of his discoveries came from the mystery.
Yeah.
Not from the fact. He made the fact to fit his visions. So there is a lot. There's a lot positive about living in the mystery and the magical world.
Yeah, it really enriches. Otherwise, it would just be dry and dust in the end. Yeah, and just enjoy being here rather than try and analyze why. I mean, we all analyze why. You know, what am I doing on the planet?
But I think that the indigenous way of living with it is that they enjoy the mystery and the magical world, but they also understand how it works. So if you ask them about that, they readily say that it's all the work of energy, and energy is what motivates or moves us in this world. So it's not something that is simplistic. It's simple, but it's really not simplistic. They understand that the complexity of nature, the interconnectedness, the quality of each of the minerals, of the plants or the herbs, but they still leave the place for magic and mystery, and that's what we don't do here.
Yeah, I think
when working with children, we allow them to have both. We legitimize that for them.
That's great. Okay. Let me just see if we have any more questions. I'll just quickly go back and check for you. Okay, I'm just going to refresh. So just, do you have any workshops coming up at the moment in your area?
Well, I'm teaching at the moment. I teach in New York City at the New York Open Center. And I teach there twice a year, a 6-week course. It's called Deepening Shamanic Experience. And then in July, I'm going to be doing 1 month intensive in the New York Open Center. It's going to be about shamanic diagnostic tools. And we work on developing our abilities to diagnose physical and emotional and soul conditions. But before that, I'll be in Amsterdam from the June 10th to the 16th, and then in Zurich from the 17th to the 20th, so 21st. And then I'm going to be in Florence in Italy until the 28th. And then I'll be back.
Great. So will you put that all up on your website, or should I put that on Earth School, your various...
I usually don't put my schedule on my website. I ask people if they want to learn about that to put their email address, and I will email them once a month a newsletter that details all these teachings. And they can also go to the nyshamaniccircle.org, newyorkshamaniccircle.org, and find out a lot about the offering that we teach there. We have many different events every month, and we bring different shamans to New York.
Okay. And there's a woman taking bookings for you in Zurich for your workshops. I will put her telephone number up on your on the replay of this page.
Okay. So wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, thank you very much for being with us again.
You're very welcome.
And it's really fascinating to learn about these.
Yeah, let's celebrate the magic and the mystery.
Yeah,
and beautiful. Be practical about it.
Absolutely, and use it. It sounds like it's a very useful tool, not only for children, but for everyone.
Yeah. That's what, and that's really what I want to leave with, that shamanism is not a fly-by-night. It's not like a spiritual practice. It's the whole purpose of it is to be practical and help improve people's life and create balance in ourselves, in our families and our communities and the world.
Okay. Well, that's a beautiful thought to leave with.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, and all the best. And look forward to having you this side.
I'm looking forward to see you in Zurich again soon.
Yeah. I'm going to come and find my power animal with you.
Oh, believe me, that would be so much fun.
And I will bring my son, too, find
great.
His power animal. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Great. Well, great. Thanks for your work.
You're very welcome.
Okay, all the best.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks, bye-bye. Everyone, for being on the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.